It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, the state of minor league baseball in Iowa. Iowa is home to five minor league baseball teams, four single-A teams, and one triple-A. A reorganization announced by Major League Baseball last fall has endangered three of those Class A teams, the Quad City River Bandits, the Burlington Bees, and the Clinton Lumber Kings. The Cedar Rapids Colonels and the Iowa Cubs were not on the list of teams that could lose their affiliation, but this uncertainty has made everyone in Iowa baseball nervous. Later this hour, I'll talk with Iowa baseball historian John Liapa and Tommy Birch, a sports reporter for the Des Moines Register. My first guest today is Jeff Lance, Senior Director for Communications for Minor League Baseball, also an Iowa native. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell me what prompted this plan, the problems that Major League Baseball is trying to solve?
Well, in most instances, it comes down to they don't think some of our ballparks across the country are up to what they want for their standards for their players and player development across the minor leagues. There are some leagues that they have issues with on travel. Some of the leagues have, the footprint of the league has kind of been spread out over the years with some expansion and things of that nature. But so they're hoping to shorten some of the road trips and make, you know, the travel life a little bit easier on the players. You know, player pay has been an issue in the minor leagues for a while now, and Major League Baseball just announced that they're going to give raises to players starting the 2021 season. They announced that over the weekend, so that's obviously a plus, but that doesn't help the 42 teams that are on the list for contraction, which we're doing everything we can to save them.
Right. Well, and taking these teams out of the league, that seems like that would actually increase travel issues.
Yeah, it would. You'd take, say you were to take Clinton and Burlington out of the Midwest League. Well, now Cedar Rapids only has one trip where they get to commute, you know, that's Quad Cities, and they could drive down there, play, and then drive back to Cedar Rapids and stay at home. So, you know, it's, there are parts of the proposed contraction that, you know, to some of us don't seem to make a whole lot of sense, and in some cases probably would make things more difficult, like you said. So it's just a matter of getting to the negotiating table with them and exchanging ideas and proposals and trying to find something that works for both sides. And obviously our main goal is to save as many of the 160 teams as possible. Now, the Appalachian League is a league that's all the teams are owned by major league teams, so they can, and they have the right in the minor league bylaws to shut down the Appalachian League if they so choose to. But, from what we've been told, you know, that's a 10 team league and there are at least 10 major league teams that want to have a team in that league. So it doesn't make any sense for them to shut that league down, in our opinion, when there's teams that want to be there and don't mind spending the money on player development. So we'll see how that one shakes out.
Well, lay it out for me. We've talked about 42 minor league teams possibly losing their affiliation with Major League Baseball. What else is there to this plan?
Money. You know, it's they're talking about moving the draft back to August so that they wouldn't have to play. You know, they draft players in June as it is right now, and then they pay them through the end of August, and you know, it's short season baseball is basically what they're looking to eliminate, those teams that start at the end of June after the draft with first year players. Well, they want to push that back and have those guys report to Florida and Arizona at the spring training sites and work out and then start playing games the following year. So they get another year of service time for those players, and quite frankly, they can keep their salaries down and, you know, it's a numbers game. You know, they want to cut the number of players so they don't have to pay that many people.
Right. So they want to pay the players a little bit better, but they'll be paying a lot fewer players.
Exactly. They're going to contract 42 teams, and that'll bring the rates that they're paying down to what they would be now with, you know, normal number of players.
There's also been this idea for a dream league. Explain that to me.
Yeah. So basically they're talking about taking a league like the Appalachian League. That's a very good league for travel. I don't think the longest trip in that league is more than an hour and a half or 2 hours for sure. Most of the trips in that league are 45 minutes or less, but, you know, they're talking taking the affiliated teams away and then starting up a league that they say they'll sanction that basically is an independent league. So, you know, the teams in Johnson City, Tennessee, and Elizabethton, Tennessee will have to pay those players and the insurance and the workers' comp claims and everything that goes along with paying players. And that's, you know, quite frankly, when you're drawing 1,000 fans a night and your tickets are $4 or $5 a piece, that's just not a business model that works. And then on top of that, you know, we did a bunch of research on independent baseball and over the last 25, 28 years or so, there's been over 200 independent league teams and only 49 of those are still around today. It's just a business model that's really hard to maintain. If you look at independent baseball across the United States, the teams that make it are in, you know, St. Paul, Minnesota, which is a huge city. They're in the suburbs of Houston and Sugar Land, Texas. They're in the St. Louis suburbs. They're in, you know, Fargo, North Dakota, which is the largest city in North Dakota. They're in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is the largest city in South Dakota. They're in Sioux City, Iowa, which is obviously there aren't any bigger cities probably in northern northwest Iowa than Sioux City, obviously. So when you're talking about cities like Elizabethton and Pulaski, Virginia, those cities are a fraction of the size of those cities. And it's just a model that can't work financially.
Well, and it seems like looking at this list, there's a real urban-rural divide with where Major League Baseball mm-hmm. wants to go, and especially in Iowa with the Colonels were not on the list there in Cedar Rapids. The I-Cubs were not on the list there in Des Moines, two of the largest mm-hmm. cities in Iowa. And we have these three smaller cities, these three smaller areas that could lose their teams.
Yeah, you know, there's certainly reasons to keep all three. You know, and that's what we're pushing. You know, I think the facilities in Burlington and Clinton are obviously a little bit older than, for example, Cedar Rapids or Des Moines and even the Quad Cities. And when those ballparks were built, you know, minor league baseball at the time, you had a manager, a pitching coach, a hitting coach, and a trainer. And so you had four staff people that needed an office, they needed a locker, a place to dress, all that. Well, now these teams have a manager, a pitching coach, a hitting coach, a field coach, a trainer, a strength and conditioning coach, a video scouting coordinator who's got to set up laptops. A lot of these teams are traveling with a nutrition person who needs to set up, you know, a bunch of blenders and places to put out healthy foods and all that. And then a lot of them are traveling with a clubhouse manager now. So you need room for 9 people in a space that was built for 4 people. Well, obviously that's going to be a problem. And really all we need is some time. You know, if you tell Ted Clinton or Ted Torno and Clinton or Kim Park and Burlington, the GMs, that, hey, we need to expand your visiting clubhouse or whatever the case may be, or you're going to lose your team. I'm willing to bet that they're going to find a way to raise a little money and do those renovations that are needed. But to tell them that they're just out after this coming season is, I find that hardly fair at all.
Of course, a lot of people in Iowa are really excited about a Major League Baseball game happening in Iowa this summer at the Fields of Dreams mm-hmm. in Dyersville. But there are a lot of people involved in minor league baseball who are saying, hey, why is Major League Baseball spending $8 million on a temporary stadium in Dyersville and then threatening to cut 3 of our teams? There does seem to be a disconnect there.
There certainly does. You know, the other game that they do like that is in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, as part of the Little League World Series up there. Well, they've been doing a game up there for, I think, 3 or 4 years now, where they have 2 major league teams come in and play at the short season Class A stadium, and that one's on the list. So, I mean, you can't tell me it's not good enough for first year pro players if it's good enough for major league players to play a game there. So,
what do you see as the timeline for this? When do you think these decisions are actually going to be made? I know that these minor league teams are working really hard to convince Major League Baseball that they should be allowed to stick around. It sounds like maybe the Quad City River Bandits are in better shape than the other two teams. What kind of timeline do you see?
You know, the current deal that we're working on, expires on September 30th of this year. So this season will not be affected at all. But obviously we'd like to get a deal done as soon as possible. Having these teams be stuck in kind of a lame duck franchise, I guess, if you will, is for lack of a better term. But you don't want these teams going into this season not able to sign a naming rights deal for their stadium. Or, you know, maybe they have somebody that wants to buy a suite or season tickets, but they, you know, they don't want to do it if it's only going to be here for 1 year. You know, that's just hurting business for everybody. So obviously we'd like to get it done as soon as we can. Now, the two sides are going to meet again next week. So hopefully we can make a little more progress this week. I keep forgetting it's Monday, but, you know, they're going to meet on Thursday and hopefully make a little more progress. The last couple of negotiation sessions have been a little more cordial than the first few. So there's some progress being made. It's just a matter of continuing the dialogue and, you know, both sides kind of being a little more open-minded perhaps. And, you know, hopefully we can get something done, you know, before the All-Star break at the latest.
Well, Jeff Lance, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You bet. No problem.
Jeff Lance, Senior Director of Communications for Minor League Baseball. We're talking about a Major League Baseball proposal that could result in Iowa losing three of our minor league teams. We'll talk more about the past of minor league baseball in Iowa, the present of minor league baseball, and our uncertain future in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the past, present, and uncertain future of minor league baseball in the state of Iowa. Major League Baseball released a proposal last fall that proposed eliminating three Iowa minor league teams, including the Quad City River Bandits, the Burlington Bees, and the Clinton Lumber Kings. Negotiations are ongoing, but obviously a lot of fans are nervous and upset about this. You're welcome to join our conversation with your thoughts, your feelings, your relationship with your hometown team. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now is John Liapa, an emeritus professor of history and political science at DMACC. He's also a baseball historian. John, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
So baseball has a long history in the United States, but also a long history in Iowa. Tell me when Iowans first fell in love with the game.
Well, it goes back to before the Civil War. The first organized town team in Iowa was organized in Davenport. And I am going to talk about the significance to the three communities in question here. They all have a long tradition of supporting baseball, but Davenport, in the spring of 1858, organized the Pastime Baseball Club number 2. And they, because of the Civil War, there weren't very many games played in Iowa. And the war itself put, you know, baseball was not a high priority. So there were some games played in some of the river towns in Dubuque and Davenport and so on. But after the war ended in 1865, Davenport all of a sudden had two more baseball teams. They had the Scotts Baseball Club and the Pasture Baseball Club. And by the next year, they added two more, the Union Baseball Club and a second Scotts Baseball Club. And by 1867, they had a number of additional clubs. They had a Union Baseball Club, an Athletic Baseball Club, a Star Baseball Club, and a Mississippi Baseball Club. Something to keep in mind is all these early town teams were strictly amateur. These were not professional players and so on, but it was important. And one statistic I'd like to share with, Iowans generally is that If you look at the year when the Civil War ended, there were about 12 town teams in Iowa, including one in Des Moines called the Capital Cities. By the next year, there were over 30 town teams. And by 1867, 2 years after, there were over 200 town teams in Iowa. And obviously, they played a critical role. If you study sort of the pattern of settlement of how Iowa was settled, it's generally from the southeast to the northwest along the river valleys. So it's not surprising that a lot of the firsts, not just relating to baseball, but you know, the oldest town is Dubuque, and the first bridge is Davenport, and so on. The oldest newspaper was in Dubuque. And, you know, so Clinton, Davenport, and Burlington all play an important role bringing baseball to Iowa. And part of that was because of the Civil War. Iowa contributed 75,000 troops. And a lot of those young farm kids from Iowa were not familiar with baseball when they went into the war. But when there were lulls in the fighting during the war, a lot of the officers who were professional people and had traveled more extensively around the country, especially to the Northeast, they were familiar with the game of baseball. And, you know, when there were 6 months before a major battle, they played baseball. And you can find a lot of Civil War diaries where they're mentioning playing baseball. It had various names. It was called base. It was called base hyphen ball. It just called ball. They were called ballists and so on. But when the war ended, not only did they, you know, come home back to the farms and so on, but they basically brought knowledge of the game. And by that time, there were just one set of rules that was spreading across Iowa. They were called the New York rules. Before that, there had been different sets of rules. There had been rules, the New England rules, and there had been Philadelphia rules and so on. And as you came to Homestead in Iowa, Iowa became a state in 46, so this is not that long after we became a state. Your priorities in Iowa were that first you build a shelter for your family, the second the community put up a church and a school, and then you got a baseball team together.
Those are your priorities.
Those are the priorities because it literally put that little community, you know, on the map. And Keokuk, 2 years after the war has ended, they have three baseball teams. There's mention in the Council Bluffs Nonpareil in 1867 that there's an all-girls baseball team being played in Council Bluffs. Keokuk later on would have an all-black and African-American baseball team. So baseball was important. There are tournaments. At the end of 1866, there's the Marshall Baseball Club of Marshalltown and the Fort Dodge Wakanda Baseball Club. They wanted to settle once and for all who the best team in Iowa was. So they agreed to play on a neutral site in Boonesboro, a baseball game. And it wasn't just baseball. It was a weekend of celebration. They would, you know, arrive in town with horse-drawn carriages. There would be bands to meet them. There would be banquets and so on. Fans, you know, came from all over to watch these games and so on. It was 3 days of activities. And they were looked on literally as town heroes. These towns, they would have oftentimes teams put together. Sometimes it was the older men against the younger men, or sometimes it was based on different traits that you were involved with. But to represent a community on, you know, the most powerful team or something was a real honor. And if you look at early images of some of the uniforms they had, you can see how proud they were. And, you know, if you look at early on, I did some research some time ago of towns of less than 2,000 people that produced two or more major leaguers. And a lot of people are familiar with Norway, which produced three major league players, Bruce Kim, Mike Boddicker, and Hal Trotsky. And some have heard of Bancroft. Bancroft produced Dennis Menke and Joe Hatton. Hatton's interesting because he played in that first game that Jackie Robinson played in. But then there are towns less known like Lost Nation that produced two major league players. Remsen, Iowa produced two major league players. Colville, south of Fort Dodge, which no longer exists, produced two major league players, Ida Grove, Holstein, Neola, and it goes on. And so baseball was just, you know, the early development of small town Iowa. And Des Moines, it had one team at the end of the Civil War. Within 2 years, it had nine teams, you know, and these were all amateur. The first professional team, all professional team, was the Keokuk Westerns. And that team was put together in 1875. But unfortunately, Keokuk was on sort of the western fringe of the National Association of Professional Baseball Players. That was the league at the time. And the season only lasted 13 games, and they lost 12 of them. And so it was a short season, but it was still important because Major League Baseball had reached Iowa, professional baseball. And one of the games included a game between a team from Boston that was part of that league playing against the Keokuk Westerns here in Iowa. And that is the first documented professional game ever played in Iowa. And, you know, the towns that we're talking about, Davenport has professional teams by 1879. And, you know, Davenport, they had a team that was part of it. It was called the Northwestern League. And then Davenport would go through affiliations with a lot of other minor league leagues, the Western Association, the Central Interstate Association, the Illinois-Iowa, the 3I, the Mississippi Valley, Western, Midwest. And it was a lot of these communities, depending on how much financial support there was and how much, you know, fan base there was and so on, that determined if they could, you know, have a team the following year. So there are gaps in some of these communities.
Well, let's focus on the three towns that may be at risk of losing their teams, John. And we've actually got the general manager of the Burlington Bees waiting to talk on the line as well. So let's talk about Burlington first. Tell me a little bit about the history of baseball in Burlington and the Bees.
Well, Burlington has their first professional team by 1889, and they're part of something called the Central Interstate. And then they'll be affiliated with eight other leagues heading up to the Midwest League in 1962 on. And Burlington, not just, you know, this long tradition of professional baseball, but Burlington has produced eight major league players. And most of them aren't well known. They're not Hall of Fame players, but James Dunnigan's from Burlington and Jack Hamilton's from Burlington. Steve Macko's from Burlington, Rodney Nichols, James Panther and Matt Parrishow. I did a program on baseball history in Burlington a couple of years ago at the library. And when I do these programs, I've done them all over the state in a lot of small communities, Titanca and Sloan and New Virginia. But at Burlington, I got there for a morning program at 10:30, and there were 75 people there for the program. And, you know, it just blew me away because I knew it was a good baseball town with a long tradition of baseball history. And they've had a lot of, you know, major league players go through Burlington, too. And I'm sure the manager can talk about it. But Vita Blue, who played here in Des Moines, he went through Burlington. And Paul Molitor, who's in the Hall of Fame, went through Burlington. And Larry Walker, who's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame later this summer, he went through Burlington. So what it does, it gives people, and Jeff mentioned this, for $5 for a general admission ticket, a chance to watch a future Hall of Famer. And where else can you do that? You know, I go to a lot of Iowa Cubs games here in Des Moines, and when the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, seven of the starting nine players had been in Des Moines in the previous 2 years. And so, you know, when you go to a major league venue, you're going to pay for a good seat $125, $150, and when you include the rest of the family and staying overnight and so on, it's prohibitively expensive for a lot of people. So, and the seats at these, you know, minor league venues, they're great. I mean, you're sitting right there with the players, and you can chat with them and so on. So I think Iowa has a long, long tradition. We've had 222 native-born Iowans that have made it to the major leagues. We have seven in the Hall of Fame, and all of them got their start playing either town teams or with some of these minor league affiliations, not always in Iowa. But that's the way you work your way up, you know, from independent league maybe to single-A and then double-A and triple-A. And if you're lucky, you'll end up, you know, in a major league ballpark.
Absolutely. Well, John, let's take a short pause here before we talk a little bit about Clinton and Davenport and their history with baseball. With me is John Leopold, Iowa baseball historian and historian of many other things as well, focusing on baseball today. Kim Parker is on the line, general manager of the Burlington Bees. Hi, Kim. Kim, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi there. Thanks for giving us a call. Now, of course, we've heard the story from minor league baseball. We know what the plan is. When you learned about this proposal, is there an opportunity for you to make changes that could help you keep the Burlington Bees?
You know, that's the one issue that we have is we're not really necessarily being told why we're on the list. You know, for example, when Jeff Lance spoke today about facilities and, you know, it used to be where there was two coaches and a bus driver, you know, certain things like that. Our clubhouse and our home clubhouse, actually, we have a manager's office that has two lockers, and then we have a coach's locker or a coach's office, which has 6 lockers. So between the two, they both have private bathrooms, so they're completely separate from players. And then our trainer has their own private office, and then our clubhouse manager has his own private office. And actually this year, the Angels are bringing in a female strength and conditioning coach, so we just renovated a space into a private locker room area for females. Last year, Clinton actually had their trainer and strength and conditioning coach that were females, so now we'll be able to accommodate multiple because there's 4 lockers in that the now women's area. So we've done stuff. In 2005, we had about $4 million renovation to the stadium, so a lot of our facilities are up to date. We've been compliant with minor league baseball since it started. And for us, that's my biggest fear, is not getting the chance. If somebody came to me and said, you need to do X, Y, and Z, I will do X, Y, and Z. We will get it done. But we're just not being told what needs to be done. And I know one of the things that the Angels have spoken out about has been commuter trips, because we travel between Quad Cities, Cedar Rapids, and Peoria, and those are commuter trips on a bus. And with player health and wellness, the Angels would prefer to not have those trips. Okay, done. I can take those away. We can make those overnight trips. So for me, we don't have anything that we've been told needs to be done. And if we did, we would definitely do that.
So that's just feels like you're in the dark.
Yeah, it is. Because we've been compliant for, you know, since the beginning, and we want to keep affiliated baseball here in Burlington. So we're willing to do anything and everything that needs to be done, but somebody just needs to tell us what we need to do.
Why do you feel like the baseball team is so important to Burlington?
We've been around since 1889. The first team was called the Burlington Babies, actually. I do not know where that name came from, but Burlington it's deep rooted here. And as the previous guy spoke, you know, not only do we have people that were bred in Burlington, but the players that actually play for Burlington. And then on the other side of that is the amount of players that step foot on community fields from other teams. So like the Miguel Cabreras and the Yadier Molinas and the Prince Fielders, you know, those guys come through on visiting teams. So not only are our fans getting the chance to see, you know, the players, the next Angels on our field, but they're getting to see the next players from the visiting teams as well. And the other thing that goes into that, we talk about fan cultivation and trying to cultivate that young fan. In minor league teams, that's where those fans are cultivated, because if you take a child to a major league stadium, they don't have the opportunity to chase down a foul ball. They don't have the opportunity to get an autograph. They have to literally sit in their seat, you know, the whole time. Whereas at our ballpark, you know, they can chase down a foul ball. They can run the bases after the game. They can, if they get the foul ball, they can ask for that to be autographed. And the thing that these young children know that they don't know is the amount of money that player makes. All they see is that player connected with me, and they become an instant fan of baseball. So really, the grassroots minor league teams, that's what cultivates those young fans and those people coming back. Not to mention, Burlington is a, you know, middle-class community, and a lot of families don't have the money to go spend a couple $100s at major league games, not to mention they have to drive, you know, 3.5 hours to get to St. Louis or to Chicago. So, you know, we offer fun, affordable family entertainment right here in their backyard. Well, that's been around since 1889.
Kim, thank you so much for making the call today, and good luck to
no
you.
Problem.
Yeah, thank you. That's Kim Parker, the general manager of the Burlington Bees. We are talking about the past, present, and uncertain future of minor league baseball in the state of Iowa. Also with me, John Liepa, emeritus professor of history and political science at DMACC. He's also a baseball historian. And John, we just have about 30 seconds here before we go to the break. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of passion for these teams in these towns. People really feel strongly about the teams that have been there for so long.
Yeah, we talked, you know, about Burlington quite a bit, but Davenport predates Burlington in terms of affiliations with, you know, different minor leagues. They had a team in 1879, and continuously from then to the present, changing leagues oftentimes, just like Burlington did. on Clinton, they have affiliations from 1895 on. So all three of these communities have been really supportive. And I think Kim, you know, made a good point of how important these teams are to some of these small towns. Clinton is struggling with manufacturing and losing population. And oftentimes it's a baseball team that sort of lets people spirits and gives them something to look forward to, and it's still affordable.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. John Liapa, Emeritus Professor of History and Political Science at DMACC, baseball historian, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the past, present, and uncertain future of minor league baseball in Iowa. Last fall, Major League Baseball announced a reorganization plan that has put three Iowa minor league teams at risk of losing their affiliation, the Quad City River Bandits, the Burlington Bees, and the Clinton Lumber Kings. With me this hour, John Liapa. He is an Iowa baseball historian. We'll bring him back into the conversation in just a moment. We'd also love to hear from you. Joe in Davenport sent us this email. He said, I read recently that Major League Baseball plans to raise the salaries of minor league players at the same time they're cutting teams. I can't help seeing a correlation. While I believe the pay of these players deserves to be raised, Major League Baseball must have enough money to do both, raise pay and keep the teams. This is from a proud River Bandits fan. And we have Ted Tornow on the line with us, the general manager of the Clinton Lumber Kings, another one of those teams at risk. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Charity, how are you?
Good. Thank you for being here today. And I, a couple of years ago, had a long conversation about the history of the Lumber Kings with Lucas Mann, who wrote a book all about your team, his Class A baseball in the middle of everywhere. So make the case for us. Why are the Clinton Lumber Kings such an important part of your town?
Well, I'm going to echo a lot of sentiments that Kim did, because we're pretty much, obviously, we're in the same boat, somewhat similar geographies and demographics and everything else. But as John mentioned, you know, we go back to 1895. We are the only charter member left of the original Midwest League. So with all due respect to Davenport and Burlington and you know, all the other teams, we have been able to sustain continuously year in and year out good standing membership in the league, and I think that speaks volumes for a city of under 27,000 people. Yes, we draw from across the river in Illinois, and we, you know, 88 corridor, and that's a good percentage of our fans come from. We're kind of landlocked to the south with our friends with the River Bandits, and to the west with Cedar Rapids. North, we do draw some from the Dubuque area, but long story short, I mean, we're the fabric of this community. I mean, our economic impact here is just under $7 million. And while that's not huge in maybe some people's eyes, the fact of the matter is we're it in the summertime for people, the things to do in the community. We've got a great sawmill museum. We've got a great summer stock theater with our showboat. We've got a great swimming pool. We have a lot of great amenities on our riverfront where we are. But you start taking those things away, and they're not going to come back. And I think Major League Baseball is very, very short-sighted. This is all about money. It's all about control. You're looking at 42 communities with probably a combined economic impact. There was an article on the Today Show about Lowell, Massachusetts. And John, you mentioned, you know, struggling town and things like that. That might be the only thing that holds that community together, among other things. Okay, let's be honest. It's not just baseball and that, you know, we drive the economic engines of Clinton, Iowa. That's not true. A lot of people do. But we happen to be a part of that. And I think, you know, Major League Baseball just doesn't care. I think Major League Baseball is looking at it from a pure short-sighted economic vantage point. And it's control. I think a lot of the minor leagues over the years have become quite successful. You see some major league clubs that are having trouble drawing fans. Our own affiliate, Miami, is struggling mightily to draw fans in South Florida. Tampa Bay, they might be successful on the field, but let's face it, I mean, their attendance figures are woeful. Is it depending on the quality of play? Is it depending on prices of tickets? I know there was some mention about, you know, good quality entertainment at a low price. Kim's right. In our area, you know, you would have to drive, you know, a couple hours each way just to get to a game. And this is the only way for our fans, our residents, to touch Major League Baseball in a very intimate way in terms of, you know, being up close, getting these kids autographs, you know, the joy in these kids' eyes, and then to hear what Major League Baseball wants to do to us and Burlington and 40 other communities is sickening. They're ruining the next generation of fans, and they don't care. They literally don't care, and in the negotiations, I think they've proven to just be very cold and callous about their intentions. They're basically saying, you know, this is what we want to do, and if you don't do it, we're going to do it anyway. And that speaks volumes. And I think when you go back through the recent events in Major League Baseball, you see the fiasco with the Houston Astros ownership and the players and their press conferences and little to no remorse. You know, the commissioner's office not cracking down on those players that cheated, yet you can bring back the memories of Pete Rose and the Black Sox scandal, and those players, quote-unquote, cheated, but they were banned for life. Players now rebuking the commissioner. I mean, there are a lot of different negative publicity things, and this is just going to be on top of it. Yeah. I mean, your writer from Davenport, how ironic that Major League Baseball wants to cut 42 clubs, yet they can afford to pay these players a little bit more. They always could afford to pay these players more. And what's even more ironic is 2 years ago, Major League Baseball went to their affiliates, and at that time we were with the Seattle Mariners, and they asked us to lobby Congress on behalf of them to extend and keep in status quo the Save America Pastime Act. So now 2 years later, they're coming back and saying, we're going to get rid of you 42 teams. So they basically thumbed their noses up at Congress and saying, well, you gave us the right to do it, but now we're going to take 42 entities, 42 businesses out of your areas, and we're going to make it tough on your constituents who want to enjoy Major League Baseball. Well, I don't think that's set well with Senators Grassley and Ernst and Representatives Loebsack and Finkenauer in our Eastern Iowa district.
Well, Ted, thank you so much for calling and sharing your perspective today. Obviously, a lot of passion, a lot of frustration. That's Ted Tornow, GM of the Clinton Lumber Kings. And I want to bring Tommy Burch into the conversation now. Tommy Burch is a sports reporter for the Des Moines Register, and he's been reporting from all of these communities that have their teams on the line. Hi, Tommy.
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. So we've heard directly from Clinton and Burlington. I know that you've been traveling around to these communities to really get a feel for how frustrated and how important baseball is to these towns. It sounds like this is the story you're hearing everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go firsthand to every town in Davenport, Clinton, and Burlington, and not just get a feel for the town, but a feel for the ballparks too, because that's such a integral part of the discussion that Major League Baseball is having with Minor League Baseball in terms of facilities, travel, and whatnot when it comes to possibly contracting these teams. So, it was very important for me to be able to get to see the ballparks, get to talk to people in person, and get a feel for just how important these teams are to each of these three towns. And like everybody has been saying so far on the show, you know, these are in some of these towns, the livelihood of these towns. These are the highlight of these towns, the biggest source of economic and social entertainment. So losing, or the possibility of losing, Minor League Baseball in Burlington, Clinton, and the Quad Cities would be absolutely devastating. So that's why you're seeing all these teams going to bat very fast and very, very intensely to keep these teams.
Well, and it sounds like they're working hard to keep their teams, but they're working hard in the dark. I mean, that seems to be a recurring theme, that they don't really know what Major League Baseball wants of them.
Yeah, I think that's the most frustrating thing, and Kim kind of mentioned that too, and that's something that I really took away from when I visited Burlington, is she was adamant about the idea. You know, everybody in every town I went to was adamant, like, okay, if travel is our issue, we will adjust it. You know, Ted had repeatedly said to me, I can do brick and mortar all day long. You know, if it's facilities, I can adjust that. The Quad Cities were just completely bamboozled as to why they were on the list, because you know, they look at themselves as an area with great accessibility when it comes to travel, and I can vouch for some of the most top-notch facilities in minor league baseball. But every one of them said, look, tell us what we're doing wrong, and we'll be happy to adjust it. But right now they're all in kind of a standstill mode where nobody wants to fix this problem if another problem is the issue for Major League Baseball and the lack of communication and just what could be wrong with their team is, I think, the most troublesome part. But I found it interesting that everybody had said, look, we will adjust. We just want the opportunity to adjust. Kim, what Kim said to me that really struck a chord was, my biggest fear is, you know, a new PBA being drawn up and us not even being a part of it or having a chance to adjust.
This is a comment from Ted in Ames. He says, should Major League Baseball decide to dissolve 3 to 4 minor league teams in Iowa and many more across the country, what becomes of their stadiums? These were often sold to struggling communities as potent revitalization tools. A sports stadium is not an easy candidate for adaptive reuse. What becomes of these white elephants? And Tommy, I know that these teams don't even want to ask that question yet, but that has to be on people's minds.
Yeah, I think it's on everybody's mind what the future could be if affiliated baseball does not continue on in their town. But it's like you said, it's a worst-case scenario right now. It's something that they don't want to acknowledge in terms of they view it as almost a acknowledgement of giving up in the fight, which I understand. But and it's fully justified because, you know, in my story, which is at DesMoinesRegister.com, minor league baseball provided me some great stats when it comes to teams that go the, independent league route, just do not survive. The chances that you're going to survive 2, 3, 4, even 5 years as a non-affiliated team just are not realistic. So, even though that might be a possibility, and even though Major League Baseball wants to talk about this dream league, which does not seem very realistic too, I think a lot of teams kind of realize, hey, if you take away our affiliation label, that's almost a death sentence, because not just for the financial benefits of having an affiliation label, but that's your biggest sell. You know, you... You talk to everybody from all these teams. What are they selling? The idea that you are seeing the future stars of tomorrow in Major League Baseball. Some of Major League Baseball's biggest stars from the Astros, Cubs, Twins, Angels have all made their way through Iowa. And that's their biggest sell to people, is not just the fan experience of being able to afford good entertainment, family fun type things, but the idea that you're seeing a future star, and you take that away if you are no longer an affiliated team.
I know that the Colonels, the Cedar Rapids Colonels, and the Iowa Cubs in Des Moines are not on this list, but they're not feeling very good about it either. What are you hearing from those clubs, Tommy?
Yeah, I think the idea right now is that even though you weren't on that initial list, it's a giant wake-up call to everybody to, hey, what's happening in Clinton or Burlington or the Quad Cities could happen to you at any time. You know, you got to keep up on your facilities. You got to address any concerns that major league teams may have. And I think all these teams around Iowa at least have told me that they've done a good job of trying to do that. So I think it definitely creates a level of paranoia where even though you're safe right now, you want a PBA that's going to last long enough to make you feel comfortable for the long term. But no matter what happens with this next agreement, every team I've talked to in the state has kind of accepted the fact that, okay, even if we survive contraction, even if we do stay an affiliated team, everybody is going to have to make some sort of changes to their park or to their travel. But like I said before, everybody just wants the opportunity to make those changes.
Let's get back to the phones. We only have a couple minutes left. Tom, very briefly, what would you like to talk about?
Hi, are you talking to me now?
Yep.
Oh, okay. My name is Tom Best, and I'm a fan of minor league baseball in the area. I go to probably 60 to 70 minor league games in the area, the majority of them being in Burlington, but also quite a few in the Quad Cities and Clinton, too. And I've written letters to our local members of Congress. I've written letters to Rob Manfred. And I've listened to a lot of what you said. And I think the thing is that minor league baseball is more than a business. It is a way of life for people in this area. I know so many people that go to every game, from the smile on that kid's face when he collects a foul ball, the family that comes together for an evening. And they may not know the players, but they're just having a great time together. And then for myself, you know, I've got to meet so many stars of the future. I'm a huge Cardinals fan, but what a thrill is it day in and day out to say, I saw this player. I got that young man's autograph. And the families in this area, that like in Burlington, are host families. They're making memories that last a lifetime. Minor league baseball is so much of the fabric of summer life in the Midwest. And to lose it is going to be, as I've heard one person, it's devastating. But I also think the thing is, it's going to, Major League Baseball has to think about how it's going to affect their future as well. You know, people become a fan because of the time they spent going to minor league baseball games. You know, they become a Twins fan, they become a Cardinals fan, a Cubs fan, and this is something that is just, as I said, it's deeply close to my heart and a lot of my friends. We do not want to see this going away. So I'm really urging everyone, write. And, you know, contact people and let them know how much it means to you.
Tom, thank you so much for your call. And again, a lot of passion there. We have less than a minute left. And Tommy, I'll let you go quickly. And then, John, I want to hear from you again as well. Congress could get involved here. Tommy, this may not just be up to Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think it's mostly peer pressure and kind of what everybody is being encouraged to do, right? Your elected officials, right, Major League Baseball, let them know just how important, like your caller said, that team is to their town. But it's mostly peer pressure where I'm guessing Congress could get involved.
All right. Tommy Burch, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Tommy Burch, a sports reporter for the Des Moines Register. And John Leopold, you have 30 seconds left. What do you think this would do to baseball in Iowa to lose these three teams?
Well, you know, Ted raised the issue that the Clinton team generates $7 million in the area, and they're going to spend $8 million for the Field of Dreams. I think it's a sad irony. They could use that $8 million. I love the Field of Dreams. I love the movie. But, you know, they should be helping these minor league teams in any way they can to stay alive and to, you know, provide a venue for fans like the one that just called a minute ago. I think it's sad if that doesn't, if we can't keep those minor league teams. They're an important part of Iowa's past and our present.
John Leopold, thank you so much for talking with me today. Iowa baseball historian John Leopold, we've been talking about the past, present, and uncertain future of minor league baseball in Iowa this hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.